Oh, yes, good morning. Yeah, my name is Sam Patricio.
I don't know what the format is. I was born in May 3rd, 1947, and in London, England. And I guess you call me a baby boomer. But right after the my parents moved to Canada because they wanted to go into the USA, but the big line of people there, so they didn't do that. Whereas Canada had better benefits and no lines, so they took a ship to Canada.
Which year was that?
1947.
After the war.
1948.
After the war.
Yeah. Anyways, so he got a farm over there. I guess they gave him some land and as incentive. Maybe 10. I guess it's even less than that. 10 acres. So I grew up over there maybe till grade. So I was like 10 years old. Then me and my, I was born into a family of five. I had a twin brother and a younger brother and then two sisters after that. So the point is, I went into, my parents, they thought, well, this mixed farm that we had, because it was a mixed farm. It had horses and cows and cattle and stuff like that, but it was too small to do anything. It was less than a hobby farm. So my dad, he got a job right away for International Nickel Company. It's called Inco. It's a great big monster outfit. And there's a city close by, and so that's how we survived on his income. And but then he decided that the house we got was like very small. We need a bigger house. So he went out and started building the construction of the house by himself because there's no money, you know. All the money he had was used up, you know, just to live. And then so me and my twin brother and that would help. Well, he bought actually a 100-acre farm. This is the second farm. He got rid of the first one. He bought the second one. And it had no building, so he just said, I'm going to build our house here. So he built a house, and I guess it's way bigger than the first house, because the first house didn't even have plumbing. It had outhouses, these outhouses. And in Canada, that's not too pleasant, because wintertime's cold. But in any case, he built this, and we helped him build this second home. And then we moved in there, and I think the main reason was not only bigger, but had a Catholic school right next, not too far away from this house, so we transferred to a Catholic school, at least me and my brother. I was at that time, we went into grade four right away. So I guess I was 10 years old at that time. And it was taught by nuns, Catholic nuns. So, and about halfway through, you know, every day they have catechism. Every day they were talking about Lord of the Second Advent, and Sister Leona was very excited. She was one of the sisters. She was so excited. Oh, the Reverend Sonia Moon, that came from the Vatican. And she wrote it down in front of the whole class book.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the Lord of the Second Hand right here. It's in the Bible. And it's even the Catholics, who we Catholics talk about it, but, you know, we don't understand too much. And they talked about the Trinity. Yeah, that's another part of the Catholic Church. It's actually God, man, woman. There's your Trinity. So, here again, I was maybe 10, 11 years old, and I was listening to this stuff. Being drawn on a blackboard, and every Friday, the parish priest would come in. His name was Father Lacey. He would come in, and he'd give us the latest stuff he got from the Vatican. At that time, Pope John the 23rd was the Pope, and he had the ecumenical council going on for the Catholic Church in Rome. And so this guy was really key on it. There was another teacher, Mr. Kerr. He was, he would fly to New York, come back all excited and everything about the same stuff. So this is like 1916, 1959, something like that. Way back then. And so with that, you know, in a while, so I understood the divine principle from the Catholic nuns, not from me. When I met the movement here in San Francisco, this was nothing new to me. Huh. Nothing new. Because I already knew that from the Catholic nuns. So, and the only thing that I didn't realize was, they had the Playboy magazine at that time everywhere, and a lot of good writing in there. So people would buy it just to read the literature, not to look at the pictures. And they had a big write-up on Reverend Sun Yung Moon in there, so I read that. It wasn't all that positive, but it wasn't all that negative either. So, you know, anyway, so the point is that God was already preparing me, and even when every time I would go to sleep, I would wake up with this big ear jaw, and I gotta go to America. The border's right there, 15 minutes away. I could walk across the damn thing. And I would drive across because I had, you know, at 16 I had my own car. I'd be driving, racing, all kinds of nasty things. You know, into Buffalo, New York, then back into Canada. And, you know, fortunately nothing that happened because I was kind of a crazy guy. But in any case, the point is, then, you know, I went to college, 3 years of that, as some kind of engineering thing, industrial engineering it was called. That was, at that time, they were just beginning to play with the computers and the computer program. So they were teaching me how, you know, about the programming of a computer. And the computers were big monsters that would fill up this whole darn room at that time. So, but that was all the new technology. You gotta learn this computer stuff. So I did, that's the course I took. But in any case, when you finish, you get a job right away. I got a job right away in Toronto. Or outside Toronto, by Oakville, that's where they have the big Ford company, manufactures the cars over there. It's about half an hour outside of Toronto. And so I went there, I worked for this structural engineering company for about 1 year, and then, it was no good. It wasn't for me. You know, all these numbers would make my head spin. And especially the accounting. we are missing 50 cents. Well, you can't go home until you find out where that 50 cents went. You know, that's bookkeeping. So, anyway, but I remember when I was growing up, you know, I was a real estate agent would just stop by and he'd talk to my dad for a long time. And he'd come back and I said, oh yeah, maybe I'll try the real estate because that guy looks pretty good. He was always excited. So I went for my real estate license and I got the license in Canada. And I went and I began to, I joined a brokerage firm. I started selling real estate in Toronto. The big city, the Lake Mirror. And I, after a while, when I got to know how the business works, I started selling houses, apartment buildings. And I was doing very well. I was top salesman. And when I got to, over there, when you're top salesman, month after month after month, they don't give you a, like here they give you a prize of money or they all go to Hawaii or go to Cancun. Anyway, over there, here's your ticket. Get out of here. We don't want to see your face. You did good. Go to Cancun. Or go to Hawaii. I got to Cancun. My plane decided to land in Los Angeles. And at that time, I said, oh, Los Angeles, look at the weather. It's so nice here. Because it was ice and snow in Canada. And it was terrible traffic accidents. So I got off the airplane. And I rented a car right away, and I drove into Santa Monica. I got off at Santa Monica because I had to, you know, they give me some suggestions. I'm here on a stopover to Cancun. Then go to Santa Monica. You know, you got rest of the day, and you could ice catch your plane later this evening or tomorrow, continue your trip. But I got to Santa Monica, I went and walked into a bar. Guy says, oh yeah, you gotta go all the way up to San Francisco. You know, you got a car, you got that along the coast.
Pretty girl there. Pretty girl there.
No, he's just, and he was another realtor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he says, when you come back, you get a transfer your license from Canada to America. It's the same thing, but it only costs $5.
Wow.
So that's what I did. I came back in the meantime, and I transferred my license, and I was a full-fledged. I could go to work the very next day. No social security number, nothing. They give it to you on the spot anyways. When you find out, they find out you're from Canada, you're a realtor. Oh, yeah, yeah, we like you guys too. Oh, come here. And here's all your paper. Go find a broker so you could team up with and go.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I have to go to those hell to change my life.
So, that's the way it works. But in the meantime, when I was in San Francisco, I parked my car there. And I met Leona.
Ditchbury,
yeah. That's another Leona. You got a man. Leona does none.
None.
Yeah, introduced me to the divine principle. Then Leona introduced me to the church.
The parallel of the 50s.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
In Berkeley, huh?
Not in Berkeley. No, San Francisco, on top of the hill.
Oh, wow.
I was on my, I was trying to get, you know, they have a tram from the downtown San Francisco going up the hill and into the bay. So I was actually on that tram. And Leona was saying, hey, I got to talk to you. What do you want? I don't know, you know, Leona, you got all long blonde hair, thick hair, too. Something like your girlfriend. Nicole. And so she I invited me for dinner at the house there in San Francisco. That's why I went. And, like, you know, it didn't impress me. The only thing that made me kind of, you know, because I already knew this stuff. Yeah. Well, here's the whole movement. I never ran into the movement. Yeah. Other than in the Playboy magazine. Anyway, so the whole point was that from there, then they took me to Camp K, and then they had they came, you know, the whole divine principle thing, and I went to Boonville, whole divine principle thing, and back to Camp K, all these people were leaving for Washington Monument. I guess I was too almost, you know, too close to Canada. And they didn't feel good to send me out to Washington Monument.
Oh, how old were you then?
I think I was 29. And they figured, oh, this guy might, you know, run back, we'll never see him again. So they kept me in Camp K and in San Francisco all this time, and then finally they sent me to New York City to MST. So I lived in a New Yorker for a good 5 years, and was teamed up with under Kanyama.
Mm-hmm.
He's the main head honcho there,
yeah.
And at that point, so he was organizing the MST, where they're going to go fundraising, which teams. And so I was on one of those mobile fundraising teams. If I wasn't on the team, I was doing Manhattan. Then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
Penn
Center, the World Trade Center, all those big buildings. Mm-hmm. Because they would have subways going straight into the World Trade Center, so it would be kind of convenient for me. But in any case, I got to know New York City pretty well, and New Jersey. But it was amazing. The first day I went out with... the second day after I arrived from San Francisco to New York, they sent me on the MST team, and with a box of peanut brittle. Yeah, and the police pulled over on this cruiser. I said, well, what are you doing here? So I'm just, I got these peanut brittle, you want to buy one? They said he got a...
permission.
No, he didn't even talk about it. He looked at your driver's license and that, I pulled it out here, Joe. So, and he said, gave it, okay, that's good, just be careful. Continue. Very nice. And so I always had pretty good rapport with the police. They would never be harsh or anything. But then, I got into they put me on a mobile fundraising team. So if I wasn't on that team, I was fundraising mostly New Jersey, Patterson, all those cities in that Trent, Philadelphia, all those neighboring cities.
Mm-hmm.
We go into, and then a little bit later, we went into Oklahoma. And I lived in Oklahoma, spent it with the whole team for about a year. And then later on, we went to Jacksonville, Florida. Here again, work Jacksonville and Florida a little bit for another year. So, but then we maneuvered into Louisiana, New Orleans, Texas, Dallas, and each place. I stayed for about our team stayed there for about a month or so, and and, you know, you move on. So the last time it was from Texas, we drove, the whole team drove into Los Angeles, and we got disintegrated. Guess what, you guys? This is your new home. No more team.
How long did you have team in MSP? How long?
5 or 3 or 7 years altogether. But the point was, you know, our team disintegrated, our captain went back, got sent back to wherever, who knows where. Mr. Pearson, he made, I don't know if you know him. And,
Tom Pearson?
Yeah, Tom Pearson, yeah.
Oh.
You know him?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he died. Yeah, he, I don't know from what, but he...
Felicity.
Huh?
Felicity. Bless on him. He passed away. Yeah. He said just bless on him.
That's not what it is.
There's no part
Poor Tom, he was a good captain.
Yeah.
I think he died of liver cancer or kidney cancer or something. Really deadly. So, anyways. Well, you know, fundraising thing, I have many experiences where, you know, a lot of times I go to school with those tinfoil pictures. And we start off, like, all day, basically, you know, Friday, early in the morning, you get out there, and you come back for lunch, and then go out, and come back for dinner. After dinner, you do the, you did the blitz, they call it, the last one.
Yep.
In the blitz, I would always crush up. I would always, like, from 5 till 7, I would come back with $150, $200, $300. Selling those stupid little pictures, door to door, in the hawkers. Oh my God. And I would blow me away, because all day I struggle, like, oh man, okay, 15 bucks left, I got the show. Oh, the blitz is coming. Oh, okay. And right away, everybody, every door I knock would, you know, they turn us all in pairs. I'd be on one side and the sister would be on the other side, so we'd watch each other at the street. So the point is, you know, I couldn't believe it. I'd come back higher than a kite with all this money. Everybody would buy. Or selling the puppets. Christmas time. Oh my God, I'd be a real crusher.
Yeah.
But in any case, I didn't understand, you know, this must be some message from the spirit world that everybody, I knock on the door, say, yeah, yeah, give me one of those, give me this, 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 or sometimes I had the box of jewelry, tough day, all day, that, so that's product.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's tough product because it's all fake. Fake gold, fake jewelry, fake apples. Sometimes I go in and they buy the whole damn box. Here's $200. And I come back to the Tom would say, where's your box? Oh, I sold it. Here's $200. He said, oh, thank goodness. Wow. You know, so I had many experiences like that. I had a few horrific experiences in New York City, Manhattan. You know, really terrible when they clubbed me from the back and beat me up.
Oh, God.
Really nasty stuff. Not too far from the New York either.
And that's a rough area.
And yeah, I lost some of my friends got killed coming from New Jersey to Manhattan, to the World Trade. They never came back. What happened? Oh, we buried him. he goes, bang. So we had a lot of, in New York City, I was held up by gunpoint a few times, but the guy's gun wouldn't go off and he was like that. So I got out of there by the skin of my teeth, basically. So I was happy to stay here instead of go back to New York because it's hair-raising stuff.
Many members that paid the price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They paid the price. They really, if you talk about operation, we got the benefits. So we always, whenever we talk about them, we have to have all of our respect because they paid the way for us. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't talk like they were some normal person.
No. New York City is a real tough job.
We have to have respect when we talk about them.
So what I'm saying, these guys weren't even on MFPRs, and they're just going to do the maintenance on the elevator or something or whatever. And then I get to know them because I live on a 34th floor or something like that, 22nd floor, Manhattan, my New Yorker hotel. But in any case, so here I am. We got this NFA. I joined the Uni World Tensuki, it changed the name two, three times a year.
True World. And,
True World, and who knows what it'll be next month.
You were here when the church divided? You remember that time?
What do you mean?
When Reverend Lee was in charge in Pasadena House, and then all of a sudden, some Western members, like Sherry Ruder and then Scott in the Steel One, many other members, they divided, they made another church, three parent church. You remember that time? You were not there. Early 90s, like 92, 93, 94, they were opposing the Rambini. I didn't like the Rambini too, because he gave such a hard time to me. Not to me, to my wife a lot, because she was a bookkeeper. Anyway, I opposed him too, but since he was, my father putting there, when the members, they divided the church, I didn't go with the church. All the Western members, everybody of them, they went to, they made a church, they went to two parents, they made the name two parents church, they went to there.
I never even heard of that.
I was the only member with the Japanese, only with the Japanese member. We went to the fish, to the Uni World Church, we had our church there. So I was the pastor, I was the coordinator, I was the singer, I was the everybody, everything by myself.
Wow.
The only taking the donation, things like that. I was the only Western member who stayed with the Japanese, and the rest of the Western members, everybody, they went to that church. At that time, they divided the church, and I just principally didn't make sense to me. I said, it doesn't make sense. His father said like that, we have all the church, we don't like this guy. But as long as Father keeps him there, we have to stay in San Divide. But everybody divides. At one time I had to fight with Sherry, she was crying. And then because they were so strong, they just get another church and everybody moved there. And I remember I was telling God in the people, don't go. And he said, at that time he was in charge of communicating. So, no, we have to do this something. Anyway, sorry, you shouldn't share, right? Please.
I may have to cut up, but
I do not know that you guys don't remember.
I want to hear it.
You don't remember.